tuned in to the Community Cats podcast. Ready? Let's go.
Welcome to the Community Cats podcast. I am your host, Stacey LeBaron. I have been involved helping homeless cats for over 20 years with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. The goal of this podcast is to expose you to amazing people who are improving the lives of cats, and I hope these interviews will help you learn how you can turn your passion for cats into action. Today, we are speaking with Bonnie Brown. Bonnie is the president of Humane Network and Options Veterinary Care, a nonprofit clinic in Reno, Nevada. Bonnie co-created and teaches the University of the Pacific's Shelter Management Certificate Program. Bonnie, I'd like to welcome you to the show.
Thanks, Stacey. Great to be here, as always.
Bonnie, you and I, we've known each other for years, and it's always great to chat with you again. And we are just talking, it's been a few years since you have been a guest on the show. So if folks aren't familiar with Bonnie and the work that she's done over the many decades, I hate to say that we've now been involved in animal welfare for decades, but in the many decades, we will make sure we put in the show notes some of the past episodes that you've been on here at the Community Cats podcast. But for those of you out there who might not be familiar with Bonnie and her work and her passion, Bonnie, can you just share with us quickly, like, how did you become so passionate about cats?
Well, that I'm so glad you asked. So I actually have to credit my parents. My parents were animal rescuers before it was really much of a thing. And my father had a business in Boston, and he would bring home stray dogs and cats, and my mother would patch them up. And sometimes we would find them adoptive homes, but not infrequently. We just had them as our pets. And so it was from that early experience that I really had a, you know, strong draw to the animal rescue efforts. And, you know, I'm old enough to remember when everybody didn't spay and neuter their pets. So I also have a special appreciation for the tremendous value that spay and neuter innovation has brought to animal welfare at large. And in spite of the fact that my parents were rescuing both dogs and cats, and we had plenty of dogs and they were great, I really personally had an affinity for cats. It seems to take sometimes a little longer to win them over. And that, to me, makes the bond even more precious and enjoyable. So certainly dogs are great, but something about cats really spoke to me even as a kid.
When did you really understand that spay-neuter was at the heart of reducing cat overpopulation? When did you discover trap-neuter return?
So I discovered trap-neuter return in 1990. I was looking for help for a kitten that I found in the gutter while I was driving home from work one night. I just, his eyes glowed in the headlights. And it was while trying to help that kitten that I discovered just how challenging it was that if I took him to the largest shelters, he would probably be euthanized as a feral kitten. And I learned about Alley Cat Allies and got more involved in animal welfare and animal rescue in general, around that time. I was about 30 years old then when I got really, really involved. And, you know, I've worked at Best Friends and worked for Alley Cat Allies in the past. And when I took over Nevada Humane Society as the executive director in 2007, we knew that spay-neuter was going to be absolutely crucial to lowering the number of animals coming into shelters, thereby giving the animals that did have to come in a much better chance of getting out of the system alive and well. So we put a lot of effort into that while I was at Nevada Humane Society, and the clinic was often neutering 10,000 animals a year, and it did make a really noticeable drop in admissions, especially for cats. It did take a few years to see that result, to really reap the benefits of the investment in spay-neuter, but it was really noticeable and really made a huge difference for that entire community.
So after your time with the Nevada Humane Society, you left that organization along with your partner at Humane Network and started up a consultancy there. But then over a few years, you decided that you needed to get involved in something else, more hands-on, I would say, or more significant project in developing a clinic. We had just gone through years of growth with the Humane Alliance model of clinics, of high volume, high quality spay neuter clinics. And I just wanted to ask you, in our theme for 2024, we have a theme of see it, solve it. And I really feel like there's something that you must have seen out there that wasn't being addressed in your community, and you must have decided to start a veterinary practice. Tell me how that journey happened.
Yes. So as part of a project we were working on, we did a survey of Nevadans, and it was really quite striking how many people were not able to afford spay-neuter, access spay-neuter, and other veterinary care services as well in our state. Plus, we were seeing that intakes and shelters were beginning to climb again. So, and I cannot really take credit for the inspiration behind this. It was two other women, Denise Stevens and Dr. Diana LaCree, who approached my colleague Diane and I about starting a clinic in the community, a nonprofit clinic that would provide spay-neuter services, TNR, spay-neuter in particular, although also for pets, and access to care to help people who could not otherwise afford veterinary care for a pet that they really love. And we thought it sounded like a great idea. And to me, out of that too is one of the keys. If you think you can't start a clinic all on your own, you may be right, but you can absolutely partner with other people and find people with the skills and talent that is needed and approach them and ask them to help play a role in making the clinic a reality. Denise and Dr. LaCree really put together most aspects on the medical side of the clinic, and my colleague Diane Blankenberg and I did the fundraising. We created a capital campaign. Dr. LaCree helped find a lead gift, which was substantial in getting things started, and we created an entire capital campaign in order to open the clinic in the community. And it included some specific strategies that are part of capital campaigns, but also a lot of marketing, because the clinic was going to be new in the community. And we needed to be sure that people knew about it and would be excited about it and want to donate to get the clinic open and to sustain it as well. So it was about building a new donor base for a brand new project, essentially.
So you created it as a nonprofit clinic. I know that the laws are different in every state. Do you have to be a veterinarian to own a clinic?
Not in the state of Nevada, no, but I do know that's a requirement in some states. Had that been the case, we probably would have had Dr. LaCree play an additional role in the process, but such as it is here, nonprofits are allowed to operate veterinary clinics. So it's not a challenge we had to deal with.
Right. And I think that it's important, if you are thinking about doing a specific clinic, you just have to research those laws and try and understand what the roles are that people will have to play in developing a clinic. I'm not saying don't establish a clinic in a state that requires a veterinarian owner. You just would have to legally restructure things in a different way. You did choose to be a nonprofit organization. Did you even explore the option of not being a nonprofit?
To be honest, we really didn't explore it very much, probably because we are so familiar with the nonprofit model. And it does have some advantages in terms of fundraising and in terms of grant eligibility, for example. In some ways, we felt that it was beneficial to us, and it's a business model that we were more familiar with. So I think that played a big part in the decision.
Do you need expert help taming feral kittens for adoption? Watch the Taming Feral Kittens and Cats full-length workshop video, now available for free on the Urban Cat League YouTube channel. Go to youtube.com and search Urban Cat League to see all of their videos to benefit community cats. Ready for a grant challenge like no other? Mark your calendars for this inclusive 2024 Open Arms Challenge. For the entire month of April 2024, animal shelters, foster-based organizations, and public charities are encouraged to create a new program or expand an existing one focused on keeping pets and people together. Learn more about how to register and important dates at maddiesfund.org. Tomahawk Live Trap exceeds customers' expectations by providing them with the highest quality humane animal control products available. Check out their new Pro Series Gravity Door Trap. They feature a door that sets automatically when you open it. No hook or plate setting needed. Use discount code KEEPITHUMANE for 10% off your order at livetrap.com. Mark your calendar. It's happening this Saturday. Join us this Saturday to learn the art of trap, neuter, return, a powerful way to transform the lives of community cats. Brought to you by Community Cats Podcast and Neighborhood Cats. This session is for anyone who wants to turn their passion for cats into action. Whether you're a seasoned caretaker or just starting out, there's something for everyone to learn. Don't wait. Reserve your spot now at communitycatspodcast.com/get TNR certified. However, the one thing that I think folks should understand, too, is if you do decide to create a clinic, it's pretty substantial revenue generating. It's got substantial overhead, too, but it does generate a lot of cash. And so when people think of a nonprofit, it doesn't mean no revenue. It means a very different thing, where it's you are there as a steward in the community to serve the needs of the community. And, you know, one term that I'm pretty familiar with is the conversation around incremental care and trying to work with a client on what services can they afford for their cat versus what is really absolutely necessary for the cat diagnostically. Maybe you don't have to do 5 different tests. You only have to do 3 different tests. And so it's still quality care, but it's incremental and it's a conversation as to what the person can afford or not afford. And that can happen in a for-profit environment as well as a nonprofit environment. But and making the assumption that you do practice incremental care at options.
We do. And, you know, when you think about a nonprofit model, I think often people are thinking about the rescue group they are familiar with or their animal shelter, which, while it probably has some fees for service, most of the income is probably coming in from donations. But I think a better model to think of in the nonprofit world might be a nonprofit human hospital, of which there are many. And of course, while they do get donations, sometimes major ones to build facilities, for example, they are also have a large focus on the fee for service income side. And that is something that would be different if you were running a clinic than, say, an animal shelter, where it's really hard to make adoption revenues such that they're going to cover the lion's share of your financial needs. You're usually relying a great deal on donations. And this model, you know, thinking about it more like a hospital than an animal shelter can help, I think, when you're looking at that clinic model that you're talking about, Stacey. Whether you decide to be profit or nonprofit, the fees for service are going to be a really critical element of how the clinic runs. And yes, we absolutely use the model of incremental care. The folks in Tennessee have a wonderful booklet they've put together. This is Align Care, a program of the University of Tennessee. And we have found that booklet to be very helpful with training new veterinarians who are coming out of the private practice world. We've also had great luck hiring several retired veterinarians, some of whom will work part-time. And that's really fantastic for us in a lot of ways. And in particular, this method of practicing incremental care is very similar to the way veterinary medicine used to be practiced in the past. It relied less on diagnostic testing because they didn't always have access to all the diagnostic testing. And veterinarians used a sort of deductive reasoning process to make decisions for treatment.
Yeah, that's so great. And it makes so much sense. You've mentioned bringing staff on, and I can't have a conversation with anyone who's involved with the veterinary practice and not talk about the veterinary staffing shortage or challenges that we have out there. Do you have any tips for success with regards to recruiting staff? And I really like your thoughts on, do you feel that there are some biases out there in the veterinary community about what it's like to work for a nonprofit veterinary practice versus one that is a more traditional veterinary practice or corporate? I mean, do we have biases as to what it's like working in the corporate world? Do we also have biases in the nonprofit? Does that work against you with regards to recruiting?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think it could potentially work against you in the recruitment side. We have one full-time veterinarian at the clinic and multiple part-time veterinarians, I think about five right now. And several of them are retired veterinarians, and they love doing it because it's something they can do part-time that they feel is a good cause, and it's rewarding work for them. And we have one veterinarian who works at another practice, and he's trying to pay off his education, and he works one day a week at the clinic. So there are ways you can attract part-time veterinarians that can be very advantageous for you and for them. We do have one full-time veterinarian, as I may have mentioned. And I think there's two crucial factors in recruitment. One is paying them well. And this is something that sometimes nonprofits struggle with the concept of, but it's really important that your wages be competitive or you're not going to be able to hire a veterinarian. But again, hiring a skilled veterinarian, that means this person can help you generate the income that you need to run the clinic. So it's an investment in someone with a lot of skills, and they will be able to help you generate the income you need to keep the doors open on a regular basis. The other element in hiring, in addition to the paying a competitive wage, is the lifestyle benefits of it. And we highlight this in our job descriptions. We talk about that we're willing to be flexible on schedules with veterinarians, and we are flexible with them. We try to do what will work for them. And the lifestyle differences. They are not required to meet a specific quota of upselling product or additional items, where that is sometimes an issue at some clinics, and some veterinarians don't mind it and some do not like it. You could take a look at the options website, which we'll give at the end, and take a look at the way we frame the job description for veterinarians. And we've honed it over time to try to make it as appealing and attention getting as possible. And also, while we use incremental care, the clinic is fully outfitted. We have and we are constantly acquiring additional medical equipment. So if they do need to do something, they are able to do it. And it's not like they're unable to perform a common test that most service clinics would be able to perform. We have all the equipment they would have.
Yeah, I always wonder sometimes, is there a bias that comes into a nonprofit veterinary clinic? However, using the parallel of the nonprofit hospital model then takes that right out of the picture in my mind. So I think that's a great parallel.
Yeah, absolutely. And right now the veterinary shortage is so crucial here. It's such a intense pace that people cannot even get in to see their own veterinarian, which they are already established clients with a pet who is sick, on a timely basis. So we are receiving those calls in addition to calls from people who just can't afford care, or they need spay neuter and it's simply not available at a price they can afford anywhere else in town. We could literally use several more clinics like ours around town, to be honest, because the demand is so huge for spay neuter at an affordable rate. And because of the veterinary shortage, I think it's increasingly challenging for nonprofit shelters, for example, to provide a robust spay neuter program. So to us, that's an important part of our community service. I will say it's been interesting to me to look at our client profile because 70% of the clients at the clinic are senior citizens, which is interesting to me. They're people who are living on a fixed income and can't afford care for a pet that they really, really love.
I mean, it's a crazy statistic, but it's a very telling statistic right there.
Yep.
It tells me, you know, we should all be connecting up with Meals on Wheels, creating partnerships, and also asking the question, what are our standard vets doing or what could they be doing to help support that population so that they're still having some diversity within their practices too? But I am also finding with the clinics that I've been involved with that there's a lot of people who may have at one point had a relationship with a private veterinarian and been able to get services that are no longer able to do that. And they're having to come to a nonprofit spay-neuter clinic or, you know, a wellness vaccination day or something like that. So, you know, they're having to be creative and also having multiple veterinarians providing different services. So there's a lack of continuity amongst the client base there for that one pet. It's going to see different veterinarians rather than the same veterinarian over years, you know, over time, which is,
yeah,
some would say is unfortunate for sure. Bonnie, I'd love for you to spend a few minutes to share with our listeners, what is Humane Network and what do you and Diane do?
So Diane and I consult with organizations across the country who need assistance. These days, we are often helping people with recruitment, either for rebuilding or improving their board of directors, but also hiring executive positions, executive directors, that development director, that sort of position. We also help with development and fundraising. If somebody was interested in building a clinic, something we could do typically is help them with that initial plan for fundraising to get the clinic open and to sustain the clinic. So that's just an example of the kind of thing we do, but we help with all manner of things, everything from coaching to, you know, practical advice. We work with actually a network of consultants. So if it's an expertise you need, Diane and I don't have, we can often connect you to someone else on our team who is able to provide the help that you need.
So other than the veterinary and staffing shortage, and that is a huge topic, are there other challenges that you're seeing in the animal welfare space across the country these days?
Yeah, I mean, we're hearing that people's admissions to shelters are increasing. And again, this is where spay-neuter plays such a huge role. And also access to veterinary care, because often when people can't afford care for their pet, surrendering the animal to the shelter in hopes that the pet will get the care they need is a step that many people end up taking when there aren't these services available. So I do feel this is an ongoing challenge for our field. The shortage of veterinarians makes it even worse, but it does, I think, present an opportunity, because if we can create an opportunity for veterinarians who care, Stacy and I had been talking a bit ago about MASH clinics. And, you know, in our clinic too, it's a focal point for these veterinarians who care deeply and might like to continue practicing after retirement, but they don't want to own their own practice anymore, or they don't want to work a full-time schedule. And so you can create a meaningful opportunity for veterinarians in your community who really do care deeply about animals and are recently retired or maybe just would like to work an extra day a week. And so consider that as you think about what you can do to make a difference. It's that old, if you build it, they will come. In a lot of cases, you can find and attract the right people to your cause.
I mean, when I started our first MASH style clinic in 2000 in Massachusetts, I think we did it at a veterinary practice who was helping the community a lot. So, you know, one of our biggest questions was how many spay packs did they have? And I think we ran it with maybe 6 people as part of the committee. It was not a large group of folks involved. And it assisted, I want to say 20 or 24 cats that first day. And, you know, lots of bumps in the road. It wasn't the smoothest day that we ever had, but those cats got all spayed and neutered And we, as you know, began establishing a protocol, and those Sunday clinics are still happening to this day, where the veterinarians are donating their time, and the techs donate their time, the volunteers. We have volunteers that have been with the program since the early 2000s, and they're still there doing their same, you know, their same station, because in the MASH style clinics, everybody has their station and they're doing their thing, and they've continued on. And back in the days when you and I first met, there were two spay-neuter clinics existing in Massachusetts. There was Alliance for Animals and Animal Advocates, I believe, down in South Dartmouth. So the concept of a spay-neuter, affordable spay-neuter clinic, was not really foreign to us. But my sense is those clinics were not a regular occurrence across the country.
Right.
And so, yeah. You know, maybe in New England, we had a little bit of a jump on the game. But I mean, I think that we've all been in agreement that we need to have affordable, accessible spay-neuter. And for some reason, we've slid back a little bit in time. And I think it's time for us to see it and solve it in 2024 and create more capacity out there. And if people want to do a capacity building project and create some more spay-neuter capacity in their communities and need assistance with fundraising ideas or advisory support, how would they find Humane Network?
Yeah, you can visit our website. It's humanenetwork.org. And you can also take a look at Options website, which is optionsveterinarycare.org. That will help give you some ideas, and would be very happy to share the plans we use to get Options Clinic up and running. As you mentioned, Stacy, this was a committee of about 5 people who worked on that project to get the clinic open. And so you don't need an army. You just need some dedicated people with some skills that will help you get the clinic open, and entirely doable. And yes, we'd be happy to chat with anyone who is interested in undertaking such a project and to share the plans we used and offer any other help we can.
And Bonnie, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
I guess the only thing I would like to say is how much I admire the work of everyone out there, because in so many cases, it's individuals who step up and have a passion for helping animals that inspire others to get involved. And it's just so crucial, the work that, you know, you, Stacy, and all of your listeners are doing out there for the animals. Without that passion, without that commitment to doing better, and really, I think so much of it does come down to the passion and the dedication to it, because that is what's inspiring to other people and gets other people involved with supporting this really important work.
Excellent. Bonnie, I want to thank you so much for being a guest on the show, and I hope we'll have you on again in the future.
Anytime.
Folks that are listening, I hope you will please consider sharing this podcast.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.